Well, good afternoon. This is
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Russ Johnson, and we have Jillian here with us, and she is going to talk about some clips I'll be playing and making some comments to get us up to speed for those people who really want to understand what's going on planet Earth.
All the resources and manpower of the U.S. military-industrial complex were hence made available for a significant expansion of the German space program, whereby it could become an interplanetary colonial power capable of deploying significant military resources outside of our solar system in support of their extraterrestrial allies. In addition to the Antarctica revelations of William Tompkins, we also have the testimony of Corey Good, who says he served in the U.S. Navy's secret space program, Solar Warden. His claims of serving in Solar Warden and having extensive contact with multiple groups of extraterrestrials were extensively examined in the first volume of this secret space program series. The connection of the pre-Adamites to different historical epochs in our solar system and the role of Antarctica as a refuge for escaping Martians and the inhabitants of a former super-Earth from the asteroid belt is laid out and scrutinized in Chapter 13. The connection between Antarctica and the fallen angels described in the Book of Enoch ensues and is analyzed in Chapter 14. It will be shown how this apocryphal book points to Antarctica as the location of their imprisonment. Most incredible is Good's claim that some of these pre-Adamites are still alive in stasis chambers and that their bloodline descendants want to not only awaken them, but also restore them to their previous positions of authority. If left undisturbed, this nexus of domination and slavery will spread like a virus over the rest of the planet with predictable results. It's up to all that cherish human freedom and creativity to rise up, end this vile practice, and expose the global elite that secretly enable it. Only full disclosure of Antarctica's suppressed history and its current events will ensure that all humanity benefits from the advanced technologies that have been secretly developed and deployed there. Disclosure will furthermore help prepare humanity for major geological events that lie ahead, as West Antarctica's ice shelves continue to melt due to increased volcanic activity. A global transformation awaits us if we have the courage to embrace the truth about what was and is occurring now in Antarctica.
Now, a lot of people have gone to Antarctica, the president, the pope, Biden, Obama, Putin. Even Buzz Aldrin was there not too long ago, and he had to be flown back because he had some emergency deals that he was dealing with, and so he had to be flown back to the United States by helicopter. So anyway, so a lot of people just don't know that story. You do, and so you can confirm what most of what he's saying is true about the Adamites?
The facts that he's giving you are correct, that there is volcanic activity, the ice shelf is melting, that there was an ancient civilization under there. In fact, they will discover four or five big cities at the time before Antarctica was frozen over. There were major cities there. So these facts are true, and it is a true fact that there are these underground caverns that the Germans went there after World War II, that they have done a lot with technology, and that the bad guys running this planet or controlling this planet have been going down there on a regular basis recently. What I don't agree with is that it's the so-called pre-Adamites, which are really the Anunnaki, right?
Oh.
That the Anunnaki are slave traders, right? They're not the ones. It's the people going down there, the masters of this world, who are the slave traders and who are in connection with the Germans and the reptilians and the really bad people in the universe and who are involved in the space program that is dealing with Mars and selling humans throughout the cosmos, etc., etc. So Corey Good's story, the other people's stories about it, I don't doubt that they are telling the truth about the facts that they see, that they observe. That, for instance, Corey Good told the story of how he took part in Solar Warden. Right? So I don't doubt the veracity of these people. I'm sure they're telling the truth. What I do question is the conclusions that they arrive at and the supposition of how things will be if certain steps are not taken. So what I do need know that we need to do is get rid of the ruling powers in the world today, the really dark powers that are behind the scenes and controlling humans and planet Earth. It is not some weird extraterrestrial on the planet that's doing that. It's the people on the planet. It's our fellow humans who are, A, being given advanced technology and undoubtedly multi-million dollar deals, financial deals, benefiting from this technology, and who are participating in some of this space activity with a group of extraterrestrials, predominantly the reptilians. And these are very bad news for our planet, and we do need to stand up and fight against them. But pre-atomites, as they're calling them in this book, that's an entirely different story. Let us remember that Akhenaten was what the book is calling a pre-atomite, and his wife Nefertiti, and it was Akhenaten who brought to the human species on Earth the concept of a living God. When we say that we believe in God, capital G, we're actually believing in the original teachings that Akhenaten brought to this planet. This was the teaching of the pre-atomites, that there is a living source of all life in the universe. In other words, they are the foundation of modern Christianity. So where we get the idea that they are all bad and want to enslave us all, I don't know. I think that they are arriving at mistaken conclusions, although they've got the right facts, but I think that they are putting them together and in a slanted way that is not quite the whole picture. It's giving a distorted view of what's really going on. That's my opinion on it.
Sure, but that happens from time to time. Sometimes you have the facts and you kind of twist them around and
right,
and turn them upside down and come out with the wrong conclusions. For instance, we had mentioned before that there is a threat by the powers, by the dark forces against the people of this planet, right? Even Reagan said that. He said it like this.
In our obsession with antagonisms of the moment, we often forget how much unites all the members of humanity. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. But yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
But isn't that pushing it, pushing it in the other direction? Because he's trying to say, he made that speech, what, before the UN? Was he at the UN?
Yes, he did. I remember that speech. First, I want to say up front, I really like Ronald Reagan. And I believe that he was one of the few people ever in politics who actually believed what he said. I think that he believed everything that he said. He wasn't believing one thing and saying, he wasn't speaking out of both sides of his mouth. So whether you agree with what he was thinking or not, or whether he was right or wrong, he was a genuine man, I think, who really did believe what he was saying. Now, when it comes to that particular speech, there are two things to remember. One, our government at that time was trying to get the Star Wars program going. You know, that thing up in space, that's when they were wanting Congress to put money into massive space program, which was supposed to be protecting Earth. So that's one thing that we have to remember, because there's always politics with a politician, right? They're always politicking,
right?
Right. But the other thing, I think, is that he was one of the ones who was trying to find out what was really going on with extraterrestrials, and nobody would tell him.
True.
And since then, I don't know it all about this, but I have read little bits here and there that have come out of his diaries in his library that was set up after he was out of office. And in his presidential library, there are some parts of his diary that speak to this matter, that he was trying to find out and nobody would tell him. They wouldn't let him in on what was happening. So I really think that he was genuine when he used that as a possibility. Now, is that possibility real? Not really, because Earth, compared to the entire universe, is not that great, right? It's at the tail end of our place in the system, in our spiral galaxy. We're at the tail, Milky Way. We're at the tail end. We're a long way from any, but we're out in the boonies. Earth as a planet is out in the boonies. It's a long way for anybody to get anything from Earth. And we don't have that much that other people really want. And in fact, the best product that Earth has right now that apparently has real value in the universe, and I do think this is true, and it's in one of these books that you're referring to. Maybe Corey Good talks about it, or Tomkins, somebody talks about it.
David Wilcock, Corey Good. Uh-huh.
Human species.
Oh.
Humans themselves are the most valuable commodity. No, you know, they make a big fuss about the Anunnaki coming here for gold, but actually gold has no real value in the universe. We value it here, but it's not a big thing anywhere else. It was required for scientific reasons, not because it has monetary value or power value. It was the Anunnaki wanted it to powder it down and throw it up in the sky. We value gold because it's incorruptible, and we have decided that because of that, it's highly valuable as a medium and as an exchange. So we back currency with it and do things like that. We set great value on it. But most other species have no interest in gold. It's not considered value. The valuable things are water. Throughout the universe, water is always a priority. And intelligence. And that's what Earth is producing in its species, is intelligence. We are probably the cheapest, most easily acquired, and most intelligent and therefore useful commodity in the universe right now. All these other negative-minded people, the ones who are bad people, and the ones who are a long, long way away and have no knowledge of us, except when we are sold to them, they put a very high price on us. And so the ones who don't care about humanity, like the reptilians, and many of the humans on this earth who don't care about the masses, they're selling us off. And that's what these books talk about in one or two places. They mention information and knowledge about this. And
sure.
It was something I'd never really given a great deal of credit to. But when I read it in Dr. Sala's book, and I know he's a great researcher and would not be putting it there if he didn't think it was valid comment, right? And then when it was backed up by two or three other talking about the same thing as going on, plus the fact that tens of thousands of humans do go missing, and that recently in the last 5 or 10 years, it's not been just, you know, homeless people who've gone missing or people that nobody cared about. It's been scientists, researchers, mathematicians, the real intelligentsia that has started just disappearing. And that is referenced in one of these stories that this person is telling, that they are fetching a very high price. We're valuable. We're valuable as workers for somebody else. Hitler thought, you know, the Polish people were valuable. He took tens of thousands of Polish people and put them in his factories to work. Well, it's the same principle, but on a cosmic scale. And I think it's predominantly the reptilians. Are the rest of the species out there going to come and make war on us? No, I don't think so. I think they will come because they're interested in what we are doing, but there aren't that many people want planet Earth.
I see.
Seriously.
You're saying that some people have said that the Earth, of all the billions and millions of planets and entities out there, that this is the outback of the universe. This is a prison colony. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. It's actually one of the most beautiful planets you will ever see. It's incredibly beautiful, is Earth, compared to most of them. It has, however, been used historically in ancient times, hundreds of thousands of years ago, by other advanced species who were then high civilizations and didn't know what to do with their criminals. Yeah, they did ship them and drop them off on Earth, just the same as, you know, the British used to drop their criminals off in Australia at one time. Well, we are the cosmic Australia. As I said to start with, we're at the tail end of our system and out of everybody's way. We are, in that sense, very useful for imprisoning people. It's quite hard to get off this planet and go somewhere. It's not easy. It wouldn't be easy to escape from, even if you had technology, because it's a trek to get anywhere. From here, it's a long, long way to go anywhere. So I would think that most of what they are saying about Antarctica is factually correct. I just think their conclusions about what these people want to do to, you know, wake up from their sleeping state and start using us as slave labor again, I don't agree with that. I think that's a mistaken conclusion.
Okay. The history of this planet, say, is that people of color have been used as slaves, brought here from Africa and other places and dropped off here in the United States, dropped off in South America, Brazil, and Peru, and other places. And there have been individuals who have complained about that was kind of unethical and immoral to do that. But yet it's being done in the vast corners of the universe, right? The same process is being done.
Yes. Huh. Yes, absolutely. And not just colored people, all colors. Right. See, here is the thing, and I think I said this once before. Wherever you value wealth, wherever in the universe wealth means power, then there will always be some kind of capitalistic system, and that capitalistic system requires a lower level of people who will do all the hard work. And when I say lower level, I don't mean that as any human is lower than another, because they're not. Everybody is as good as anybody else. But they have been used as if they were an inferior race, an inferior person, and only fit for slavery, for being told to do. And we have slavery all over this planet now. Slavery has never gone away. The only difference now is that, well, okay, let me backtrack on that. The thing about slavery in the terms of, like we hear about in America, the American slavery a couple of hundred years ago or whenever it was, you know, the thing was that the slaves were owned by somebody and had to work and had no choice about it, right? Well, today, the average man with a wife and two kids who has a job in a factory anywhere in the U.S., and he's at the low end of the pay scale. He's the floor sweeper or, you know, a janitor, one of the menial jobs in the industry, not getting the big bucks, as they say. He is not going to make a living working as hard as he can possibly work all week. He's not going to make enough to keep himself, his wife, and two kids. And so he is in a slave situation. And he becomes a slave because he can't give the job up. He cannot ever afford to say, I quit this job. Look how many thousands, and I've spoken to a few hundred people that I've spoken to in the last 2 or 3 years, how many tens of thousands took the COVID shot, the vaccine from Pfizer or Moderna or wherever, because their job told them they had to, and they couldn't afford to quit their job, even though they maybe didn't want to do the vaccine. I have talked to hundreds of people who said to me, I would never have taken this shot, but I would have lost my job if I didn't. Very few people, my doctor in town, she worked at the hospital clinic, and they were all obliged. So she quit her job. She could afford to do it. She left her job and she opened a private practice in our town, which is great, right? The point is that I'm making is that today, because of the control of a few people who control the wealth of the world, and it's like 3% of the population globally control 99% of the world's wealth, they have the power. And through that power, they enforce regulations which actually create a situation for most people where they are living in a state of slavery. They are slaves. Would you agree with that?
There's no question about that. To eke out a living at $7 an hour or $8 an hour or even $10 or even maybe for a family of four is tough. I mean, it's really tough.
It's not possible. It's not possible. On today's rates of pay, minimum wage workers with working 40 hours a week or even 48 hours a week, which is a reasonable amount of the week to work. You should be able to earn your living in that time, and they can't live on it.
No.
It's not possible for people to live on it. So I am not an advocate in any way, shape, or form for any form of communism, and I am not an advocate for taking, wealth from the top and giving it, just handing it out to the bottom, the social welfare state. I don't support that either. But you should, if you work, you should be paid enough to live. If you're working for it, if you are working hard, you should be able to earn enough in a reasonable work week. This is just my opinion, right? I think you should be able to learn. And I also have this, I've had this all my life, this strange idea that a garbage collector, in my opinion, is worth just as much as a neurosurgeon. And why do I say that? Because it sounds like nonsense. But here's the thing. We could probably do without neurosurgeons, and maybe a few tens of thousands of people worldwide would be affected every year because they didn't have the neurosurgeon available. But everybody on the planet would be affected if we didn't have any garbage collectors.
True.
One of the, right?
So true.
Why aren't people paid proportionate in some respect? Or why aren't they given the respect for the value of what they do with their time and energy? Any job, it doesn't matter what the job is, it's the energy of somebody's life that is going into that job. We are using up somebody's life. And so I don't think it's right that somebody like Bill Gates just keeps plowing his money in and making more and more and more until it runs into billions of dollars, right? And then sits there telling other people what they should do.
All right.
When other people can't even live.
True.
Anyway.
But you say you don't want to take from the rich and give to the poor.
Right.
Okay. All right.
So that kind of system, that system clearly exists throughout the universe. It's not just here on Earth that we have the mega rich and the slave workers. It's throughout the universe. But
what are you saying?
On those
that's on
societies,
Mars? That's
on, Well, not on, yes, they're taking our people to Mars, but that's still Earth human. It's Earth humans who are running and own the businesses that are going on Mars, the mining that's going on there. Some of our most famous families are the big shareholders, I understand, in the mining on Mars.
Okay.
And they're the ones who are having our people's, their fellow humans. So it's humans stealing us. In the situation of Mars, I'm talking about the reptilians who are having people stolen and shipped off apparently all over the universe. And what's happening there is clearly that those civilizations that are buying the humans are so advanced that their own people won't do the work. So they're having to buy in other races that will do the work. And apparently they're buying humans.
But didn't Hitler thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to the underground
Antarctic.
Base Antarctica? Yeah. He did that. And that's still happening, right? Yes?
His factories are still operating down there, yes.
Okay.
I think there is more than sufficient empirical evidence today to prove that is still continuing and that it's continuing in collaboration with our government specifically. I am sure with the Europeans, the EU will be involved in it, I am sure, right? But certainly I know our government is, and that there is some sharing or arguing over the technology and the advancements which are being developed there. And that is already in use in our own space programs. And I accept what Dr. Sala has researched, because he has the documentary evidence in his books, that it is, I believe, our naval space program, that you might say are the good guys, and our army space program that's working with the reptilians and the Germans out of Antarctica.
All right. So most people don't understand that. I mean, they don't know that. I mean, this is really new to most people. I'm looking at Dr. Sutler's books here. It's Antarctica's Hidden History. That's one. Another one is the U.S. Navy Secret Space Program. That's another book. And then he has one by Kennedy's Last Stand, the title. He talks about Eisenhower, UFO, the MJ-12, and the JFK assassination. Anyway, so he's a consummate researcher. This guy is really prolific in his writing and his researching. Let me do this. I don't want to get you off target, but since we talked about Dr. Sala, now, you know, he has a podcast. He does a radio show at least once a week, maybe more often than that. But let me play this.
It's involving all of us in that. I don't know why I was selected or the other children. I just think it's because we were bright, psychically gifted children who had been identified by Project Talent, which was that program that Admiral Hyman Rickover started in the late 50s to identify young Americans of advanced intellectual, psychic, and leadership potential.
I just want to kind of confirm that I actually did follow up on a couple of people that were in that Talented and Gifted Children's program, and they confirmed that you were also part of that. So. Well, Andy, I want to thank you profusely for coming on my show, sharing some of your information. You have really detailed memories of what happened throughout these projects. And I know you have a lot to say also about the Mars Jump Room, and I hope to talk to you about that in the future. And there's more details about some of these key people you mentioned. So I'm looking forward to our next interview. So thank you.
Yes, well, Michael, let me thank you for the first time publicly about the fact that you first did not believe me, because my work is a tall drink of water, as they say, but it is true. And I really salute you for having the integrity and demonstrating the truth that has to be pursued in the truth movement when you embrace the truth of my experiences following that epochal interview with Art Bell. And I really, I really thank you and salute you for that. You know, demonstrating that adherence to the truth. Because, I think at the end of the day, it's not about me or you or persons. It's not about personalities. It's about the truth itself. And so I think we have to have that kind of flexibility to say, well, you know, I first believed this, but, you know, I've now modified my view of it with this new information. And that is the scientific approach. So I salute you for being scientific in your approach to my material.
Well, thank you, Andy. So all the best, and I look forward to our next conversation.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.
All right, then he has one, exopolitics.org. So that, I wanted to play a little bit. He was interviewing Andrew Bisago. Do you know Andrew Bisago?
No.
No, a licensed attorney with the state of Washington who claims to have participated in classified programs involving time travel, the space-time portals, ever since 1967. He works very closely with Laura Eisenhower, the great-great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, in terms of looking at the issues of space travel and the black box and you know, all the other abductions and all of the other stuff. So anyway, but exopolitics.org or exopolitics.com, you might want to see what Dr. Sala is talking about. But anyway, I wanted to play that since we were talking about him. Now, I didn't... Yeah. And I threw you off the subject, I suspect, by now.
No,
but
actually, there is something I'd like to say about that clip you just played. When the gentleman was speaking at the end, he made a very good statement that I can totally support, that you're seeking the truth. We're all seeking what is the truth. And that if you come across something and it appears to be the truth to you, and then you get some new information, which gives you more enlightenment, which gives you more information about the subject, don't be afraid to change your point of view. Don't be afraid to say, oh, I was mistaken there, or I got the wrong end of the stick. I didn't quite understand what it was saying. Truth itself will never change, but our understanding of it is always subject to growth and development and alteration, right? So
okay.
I like that he came in and said that. That's important for anybody to think about.
Well, Andrew Bisago, yeah, sure. When you Google his name, Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W, and Bisago is B-A-S-I-A-G-O. He's a licensed attorney in the state of Washington, D.C., and so he's been around a long time. He was supposed to be running for president in the next election, but I don't know if he made a decision on that or not. But he's saying that with Laura Eisenhower, and they go back maybe 30 years and all of this discussion, that Obama and he, Laura Eisenhower and some others, they were on Mars some 30 years ago and discussing the fact that Obama would be president at one point in time. So that's another piece of that whole action. But a lot of people just didn't believe him. Michael Sala seems to say, I've researched you and you are credible in spite of some far-reaching pronouncements you have made, if you will. Does that all make sense?
Oh, that man who was speaking was telling the truth.
Right.
I mean, I've seen his name, Bisago. I've seen the name, but I don't know anything about him. I know nothing until you just introduced me to him, so to speak. But as a clairvoyant, I know when somebody's telling the truth or not.
And that
man was telling the truth. Whatever he was talking about, he was telling the truth.
Okay. You were probably born with a skill of being able to discern the truth when you hear it, but most people on this planet don't know the truth because they're constantly led astray when anybody just makes up any kind of story. As a matter of fact, more than half of American people believe that UFOs have visited Earth and have and the governments of the world have contacted them. Eisenhower, Corso, and all of it. We could go on and on. What do you think about the attitudes of a people in America or in the world to toward alien, the extraterrestrials, if you will. What do you think? Have you thought about that at all?
Well, I haven't. No, I haven't given it a lot of thought. I do think that the film industry, the American Hollywood version of extraterrestrials, is designed to bring them to people's awareness, but also, certainly through my lifetime, the film industry, it seems, has been designed to make us afraid of all extraterrestrials, that they're always, you know, coming with ulterior motives, and many of them, I think, are. They are not up front. I don't, you know what, the ones who are supposed to be and are most connected to Earth and interactive with Earth are the Pleiadians. There are hundreds of people who have connection, who are visited by the Pleiadians, who have interaction with the Pleiadians. And I'm kind of suspicious of them. They come across as all sweetness and light. You know, they're all sweetness and light. They're all uplifting. But they just, I'd like to know what their agenda is.
Okay.
And I think that's what we all have to be aware of. You know, don't take what they first tell you. Let them show us what their agenda is. And it's the old story. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
All right.
And that's how
think?
The Pleiadians come across to me. Too good
okay.
to be true.
Okay. What do you think about the Greys who have been doing most of the abductions in the past 30 or 40 years? What do you think about
those
individuals?
As far as I know, there are two species that I know about. The small ones that are grayish, silvery color. I don't know where they come from, but they are maybe 3-4 feet tall. They're very small. They're more like pixies. They look like pixies, you know, like you imagine a pixie, 3 or 4 feet tall and gray or silver color. And they are from a planet and have been working with and for the Anunnaki for thousands and thousands of years. There are species that align themselves with the Anunnaki, and they are brilliant technicians. You know, they are like electrical wizards and anything to do with electronics. And that whole little race of beings are fabulous. They just can work miracles with electronics.
Okay.
Tall grays who do the abducting. I believe they are a degenerate species. They're one of the species that came to Earth and has been trying to crossbreed with Earth humans and not been very successful doing it.
Well, I don't know.
I just think they are a degenerate species.
Okay, but when we look at, okay, let's go back to the motion pictures that we've mentioned, that, you know, the television, the radio, the theater movies. I'm going back to one called Taken. Did you ever see Taken? Spielberg did that. It was a 13-hour miniseries. Okay, you saw that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that.
Most of the constructs in that 13-hour miniseries were true, right?
Yes. I thought it
okay.
was very good.
Okay. All right. One of the things that many people would be surprised of, that we saw a young lady being taken aboard the aircraft, abducted, if you will, and then the gentleman also was taken aboard, and both of them made a baby, if you will, or for lack of a better term. So, and that child obviously had super abilities. Could you talk about that? I mean, that's still going on, is it not?
I don't know. It was a nice, part of the movie, but probably. I don't see why it wouldn't be going on.
Yeah, but it says in the Bible that how do you phrase that? The kings
the
of
gods
the...
saw the, yeah, the gods saw the daughters of men and found them fair. Yeah.
That's happening even on spaceships.
The angels like the beautiful women.
Okay. That's still happening, would you believe?
Oh, well, I dare say it is. I don't know whether it is or not, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, let me do this. Eisenhower was very instrumental in meeting with alien forces. I think the Holloman Air Force Base, 1954, something around that area. Somebody might say, no, it wasn't Holloman, it was some other Air Force Base. But anyway,
Area 51. Mm.
Was it Area 51 or Edwards Air Force Base?
He went to Area 51.
Okay.
To Holloman Air Force Base.
Okay. Anyway, he met with a group of them. Who were they? Were they the Palladians? Were they Greys?
I have no idea.
But he did meet with them.
I have no idea. He went there and he had some experience, which clearly from everything that followed really shook him to the core.
And
I think made him very angry. And I think that's why he came out finally with that statement about the military-industrial complex, and we needed to be very careful of it because it would take us over. I think he understood then what was going on and that this really was the German Fourth Reich.
I see.
They would not even give him,
we're talking about Reagan.
No.
Couldn't get the secrets, right? Because Majestic 12 blocked everybody.
No, they refuse. The secret service people of the United States hold all the information, probably the secret arms of the military, I would imagine, top level, above top secret, right? They hold the knowledge about the extraterrestrials and the relationship with the German Fourth Reich under Antarctica and their interaction with the various extraterrestrial beings who visit this planet. And the president is never told. And what they are told is that they can't know it because they need deniability. They need to be able to say it's not true.
I see.
They need to be able to basically lie. Because they don't have the knowledge. It's not true as far as they know, right? Because nobody lets them know. And the one person who was trying to turn that over, I understand, was Donald Trump, because if I remember rightly, at some point, he put some kind of legal order in where they were going to have to turn over what they knew about the extraterrestrials to the president. And that would have come about in Donald Trump's second term, which he didn't get because we got Biden instead.
Well, he still might get it because Biden seems not able to run for the next round, so to speak. I don't think so
at
this time.
No.
Yeah. And then Vice President Harris, I don't think she's capable of handling that. But anyway, but that's what I think. But Eisenhower, the statement he made was because they would not let him have the secrets, and he was really miffed about the fact that he couldn't get that information, and this is how he said it.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Now, Kennedy met with Eisenhower when he took over in 1960, and he too could not get those secrets from the MJ-12 group.
No.
None of them. But this is what Kennedy says, and then you can comment on this.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies. to secret oaths and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
Now, comment on that.
Well, first of all, listening to that speech again, and I've listened to it before, it's no wonder they got rid of him. It's not surprising, because he was willing to have a transparency, to have openness, and we have not got it. At this point in our history, you only have to see what is happening right now and over this last year or two and know that they have succeeded, they meaning those who form the military-industrial complex and the complex with it and run everything from behind the scenes. They now have absolute control. And this has been 100% demonstrated by what we were talking about before. If you don't get your COVID shot, you lose your job. Think about that. That is ultimate control over a human being. If you don't let us put into your body what we want to put in because we've decided it's what should be done, then you will not be able to work. What more control can they have over a human being than taking away the right to work unless you do what they tell you?
Right,
and so
right.
this has already fulfilled itself. And quite frankly, those guys that run the show behind the scenes at this point in time, they think they've won. They think that this military-industrial complex, which has our society by the throat right now, they've got us by the throat. But as I said before, I am expecting major changes in the month of August this year, next month. Excuse me.
Go get a drink of water. Listen.
I am.
Okay.
I've got a frog in my throat. Major changes. And these people who think that they have won and who are abusing every one of us on a daily basis through their behavior and the rules that they make to control us by as individuals. They've taken away our freedoms. They've taken away our controls. They're taking away our rights over our own bodies. We are 100% slaves to whoever owns or is participating in that cabal. And what I want to say loud and clear, if you're one of the ones, and this includes all these above 33 degree Masons, top of the heap there, the lower levels who think it's just a fraternity club to help one another, they are gravely mistaken. Once you get over 30 to the 33 degree level, whole different ballgame. All the hundreds, if not thousands, who have come through this Skull and Bone Society, right, produces vast numbers of our leaders and politicians and industrial ahead CEOs of corporations, all members that have gone through that Skull and Bone Society at Yale, all these secret society groups that behind the scenes control everything, they are in for a big shock. They are really, really, it will be amazing when you see what happens to them, because they will be destroyed.
Well, it's a far stretch to think that, because in the last couple of years, they've closed down the world.
I know,
right?
They have.
How
I know
you close
they have.
Down the world?
Number one on the firing line, Dr. Fauci, with his German eugenics program. He's still running the eugenics program that Goebbels had going in Germany, started in the 1920s. These things are intrinsically evil, and evil is going to get a big smack around the head before too long.
All right, well, he's working very close.
It will be powerful.
Well, he's working very close with Bill Gates, who, may I say, has made... He believes in eugenics, you know. His father did.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Look, you can look at some of our biggest and best-known families, and almost all of them have connections to or at least one or more members of these families involved with that whole eugenics movement, the whole white race supremacy movement, the whole just this movement of control of other people, of taking your average normal human being and treating them like slaves, right? And they all do it. There's Bill Gates with his eugenics philosophy, right? There are the Scientology people who think pretty much the same way. There are the kings and queens of this earth who think that they have divine right to rule. All these things are really going to take a big hit because they are wrong. They have become, whether they started out with good intention or not, they have become manifestations of evil on this planet. And it is going to be swept clean before too long. It cannot be tolerated, and it will not be tolerated, because no matter how powerful these people think they are with all their wealth and their money and their being in the know and the things that they control, and there is much higher authority in our universe than people like Bill Gates and the Clinton family.
Okay,
and that higher authority is going to be stepping in and taking an active role in cleaning up this planet.
Okay. But may I say, without stumbling here, that the powers that be it the Fourth Reich, the Third Reich, Germans, whatever, whomever, and Alan Dulles back in the day, suggesting that he had Kennedy killed, and he was in charge of the Majestic 12, made the decision. Now, in the book, Kennedy's Last Stand, so you might want to read that, Michael Seller talks about that. But I am just saying that they closed down the planet. They're working with, you say, the Dracos, the Reptilians, the Palladians, whomever, and they're getting advice from them, building spaceships, and they've been doing that since late 1930s. Who are the good guys? Give me some of the good guys. Who are we talking about? Who will come and save us? Or is Jesus coming back to save us?
Well, nobody is actually going to save us in an eternal sense. We are expected to stand up and fight for ourselves, right? But there comes a point where external influence, if you like, can be brought to bear, which makes it less palatable for these wicked people to do the things that they do all the time, that it strikes them down, that it makes it no longer possible for them to behave in the way that they have been behaving. And my understanding is that things have to come to, it's kind of like, you know, when you have an abscess, you bring it to a head and then it bursts. Well, on this planet Earth, everything is coming to a head now, and with next 2-3 years, you will see things breaking open and the garbage pouring out.
Well,
we're in for a most interesting time in history, and those who think that they've got it made are very much mistaken, because the events in the cosmos are such that they cannot survive those events.
I
they
see.
have there's there are some things that cannot face, you know, they're saying it can't face the light of day. Well, there are light energies at loose in our universe right now, building, increasing, developing, expanding. They get exposed to those energies, which they will, everybody will, right? They simply, literally cannot survive it. It will kill them. They will go insane.
Well, your friend Laura Eisenhower, the great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, says it this way. Laura, talk to us.
Into the relationship that he was sent specifically to draw me into this recruitment, while this whole time I just thought that I had run into a person that was involved in going to Mars and I had the option to go or not go. And when I found out that I was specifically targeted to go and that if I were to leave that I might be kidnapped or taken anyway, I knew that I was dealing with something very heavy and it wasn't feeling positive. Whether or not I was going to go, it didn't feel positive. Because initially I thought, well, this doesn't sound like a terrible thing to protect the human genome. I just know I have a mission on Earth. But finding out that this was a manipulation and it was set up to program the people involved to have them believe that they're helping humanity was where a lot of very well-intentioned people I was seeing getting caught up in an agenda that is not serving us as a humanity.
So she would agree with you that there's a problem here on Earth, and
yes.
I don't know how it's going to be cleaned up. You think the Anunnaki, you think the Space Command?
Well, they will be back. The Anunnaki will be back. They have an extraordinary interest in this planet because they came to it hundreds of thousands of years ago. They came at the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. They've been, you know, many times to this planet and have a real attachment to it. So, yes, they definitely will be back. And they have been fighting the reptilians for thousands of years in space. That's been an ongoing battle, trying to control the expansion of the reptilian empire. The reptilians are very strong, physically strong, very powerful, and highly technological. They're one of the most ancient species in our universe.
So,
I told you the story that they came here by mistake. But when they came here, that was long before Earth existed. They're a really ancient species and dangerous because they're not human. Most of the species that we interact with are human species of various sizes and shapes and colors throughout the universe, but they're humans.
But, all right, but
reptilians are not human.
And they can shapeshift, right? The reptilian.
Right.
Is that right?
Well,
so
they can do, they can look human. They can make themselves look human. And they can embody themselves in humans. They can take over humans.
Okay. And they probably are doing it as we speak. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree with that. Yes,
okay.
I would.
So we talked about Jesus the other day, and by the way, it says the problem in the Bible, it says, look at Ephesians 6:12, for we do not wrestle against the flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers. Of we have a battle. It's not just good and bad.
Yes, we have a battle. We really do. And it is the power between good and evil. That's really what we're in now. That's why we have to stand up. I understand this whole thing about, you know, the COVID thing, and the people behind it making you have shots and boosters and goodness knows what. That's evil. That's putting bad things into your body and forcing you to let them do that. Otherwise, you can't work. You lose your job. So standing up against that for most people who have bills to pay is impossible. But somewhere down the line, every single person has to stand up and make an effort to not accept this evil in their lives, because it is just one manifestation of all the evil that's around us. But it's a very clear-cut one. It's something that should not be done, that should not be allowed, right? And so
what are they going to do? 70% of the people in America.
I know. They did the shot. Yeah.
Okay. Now what?
That's
hundreds of millions of people.
I know. And then they went back for boosters. And they're still advertising their booster shots. And people are still going and getting them, despite now almost 2.5 years of valid information coming out from doctors and researchers all over the world telling you this is bad for your body. This does not protect you from COVID. This does not have anything to do with COVID. All it does is put something into your body which produces spike proteins that will never stop reproducing themselves, and that they will get into your organs, and that they will cause organ failure, and you will die as a result. So despite all that information out there, and nice color pictures and slides from laboratories and you name it, possible simplification of the information has been made public, and people just choose not to believe it because it's easier to go along with the status quo than it is to stand up against something as powerful as the government when they're telling you, you have to do this, and if you don't, we won't let you work. We won't let you go to the theater. We won't let you eat in a restaurant. We won't let you go to a museum like it is in New York. If you haven't got your passport that says you've had all your shots, you can't go into the museums or the theaters. Well, this is outrageous. So socially, we should stand against this, but this is just a very superficial manifestation of the evil. The real evil that's gone on and has been built into us has been the conditioning of the human race, or the conditioning of the people here in America, that has made them susceptible to allowing this to happen to them. We've all allowed it. We've been so busy with our lives that we haven't seen where we were going. But here's the thing I would like to remind people of, that if they are listening to programs like this, like Dr. Sala, like all those other programs out there that are telling them these same kind of things, basically the truth, right, are doing our best to tell the truth to people, right, and to get them to see that the perspective of truth with their own eyes, not just believing what we say, but finding out for themselves, yes, this is true, then these people are in fact those who in the Sermon on the Mount, if I remember correctly, say something like, blessed are they who are seeking righteousness and thirsting for righteousness. Well, righteousness is truth, right? So all those people who are trying to understand these things and are doing the research, listening to the programs, doing the reading, they are the ones who are searching for righteousness. And the Sermon on the Mount promises them, what does it say? Something like, they will be filled. It's a story of ask and you will receive. Ask for understanding and you receive it. So everybody out there who listens to these things is on the right track. Even if they, you know, were in a bad position and were forced to do their shots, for instance, they can bypass that. They can overcome that because they are searching for the truth.
Yep.
And really that is all that's required of us in order to move forward with our lives.
Okay. I have to go back to Tesla, Royal Rife, and the energy machine that there's a machine that finds the frequency of a disease and kills it.
Right.
So if the Anunnaki or whomever else out there who's benevolent, if you will, why don't they give it to the people? Why don't they...
Well, it was on the planet. We've had all that. That was frequency medicine, was what was practiced in Lemuria, which was down in Antarctica, before the ice, right? That whole continent was part of Lemuria. And that was the medicine that was practiced in those days at the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, was frequency medicine. And it is coming back now. The thing with the Anunnaki is that they did that genetic engineering and there were mistakes made. Problems have been created for humanity. There's a huge karmic debt. This is a big reason why they sent Christ, and this is a big reason why they're coming back to correct this karmic obligation that they have to the humans on planet Earth because of the mess they made with the genetic engineering in the first place. But they learned the lesson. They won't do that again. So they've had to wait until the Earth humans themselves scientifically were able to map the human genome. Now the Anunnaki can come back and say, okay, now we can work with you and we can give you the information you need to correct all these diseases, which are essentially the autoimmune diseases. And then the same applies to what went on with the technology, with the things that they were able to tell us. So they are already putting it in people's minds, helping them, helping researchers and giving people ideas. A lot of work is done from the other side through the dream state. People who dream, and I'm not talking about dreaming as a result of, you know, too much television or what they had for supper, but dreaming as lucid dreaming, as actually going out of body, interacting with beings out of body in the spirit sense and coming back and having memory of what it is. That methodology is used a great deal, especially by the Anunnaki, with the people they know on the planet, with the people they talk to, like me, right? Like, and there's, I'm sure, tens of thousands of people on the planet who they interact with. And the dreaming state, lucid dreaming, is very useful for exchanging information through the veil, if you like, from that side to this side, through spirit. So a lot of information is being given to humanity, and there are major advancements being made in frequency medicine, and have been for the last 20 years or more. I know when I used to go to the global science conferences in Denver, there were young researchers there bringing equipment that was based on Rife equipment but was more advanced so that they could measure the frequency of a specific organ. What nobody has yet done, to my knowledge, is be able to measure the frequency of a virus. The technology has not reached that fine-tuned level yet, and we need to be able to measure the frequency of a virus or a bacterium in order to destroy it without damaging the organs of the body. But most of the organs of the body have been mapped, and we do know their frequencies.
Okay.
That's all right. Already known.
All right, let me do something. Once again, I want to take another 3 or 4 minutes and let Laura Eisenhower talk about the fact that she's been working with forces of good, if you will. She's obviously, as I said before, the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, and she's become a spokesperson for conspiracies of aliens, abductions, and sinister machinations by the Dracos.
I don't know why, to have me at home, and back then nobody was really having kids at home. I think she felt this need to protect me because I don't know what would have happened, because I was pre-targeted before birth, and that's about all I know. But she had this instinct to make sure she had me at home. And I mean, they do all sorts of things. They'll take your kids away. I mean, I remember after I gave birth to my kids, and they were considered high risk because they were twins, even though they were full term and they were both, they weighed a lot. I mean, they were both 6.5 pounds. I couldn't get a midwife to help me have them at home, but I wanted to have them at home. And I remember just shuffling my cards and doing all I could, because instinctually I knew that having my kids in the hospital was not safe. We got to fight for these people's rights. I mean, everybody's got to stand up, because the thing is, the shift is happening through the human race. It's not happening through anybody else, because every power structure has been infiltrated. And the sickness behind this disregard for biological life is the transhumanism agenda, because transhumanism destroys all biological life eventually. And there's nowhere in any star system or galaxy that has ever been successful. And as much as, well, this is what I heard from, you know, different whistleblowers, that they give people a chance to step away from it, telling them the ramifications of what transhumanism will do. But they don't care because they're in the life cycle of this harvesting, and you can't get any lower than, I mean, you can't get any lower than any level of it. It's all really low. So as you know, my perseverance and these sort of things that, you know, I join with you and I'll do anything that it takes to put these treaties to an end. And the thing is, you know, understanding the roots of them really helped, because, you know, the only reason I mentioned the Eisenhower thing was definitely not directed at you or anything that you said. It's just the amount of emails that I get shutting me down because, oh, this is, you know, look at what your great grandfather did. What a legacy. And it's like, you have no idea. There's a much bigger picture here. And, you know, if anybody wants to contact me directly for me to give them the information about where these originated and the infiltration that already took place before he stepped into government, and the fact that these breeding programs and this sort of thing has actually been happening since Atlantean times. They used to carry these advanced individuals off to Nibiru to breed with, took away all their rights as women. So, you know, we keep seeing the war changing and morphing into new forms of expression for the basic vampirism of the human soul and sexual life force in connection to spirit. And so, you know, and how that relates to the grids and this dumbing down of our DNA is, you know, the infection of these earth grids to keep us from being able to synthesize the masculine and feminine within our DNA. And the thing is, once we recognize what's been targeted, which is our own internal balance and unity consciousness, and we begin to push the envelope in really preserving the sacredness of those relationships and ourselves, and we really walk a path of integrity, they absolutely don't have anything on us. And nobody should be resistant to this. There's no instant gratification that is higher or better than devoting yourself to this and the long-term rewards that come along with choosing to be in alignment, because we're on timelines right now where we can be in our avatar consciousness, where we have more powers and abilities than we can imagine. But the whole deal is people are so infected or obsessed with the ego gratifications that feed them on an instant level that they don't even care about that. And so that reptilian part of our brain is what they're targeting. And that's just such a small part of the rest of all that we are. And it's an addiction matrix too. So we just, you know, really have to be strong in ourselves, because the more we rise up, all these imbalances will naturally iron themselves out. And more of this stuff is going to come to the light. And this is why where we are right now is, I have a good feeling about where we're heading, because a balance is returning. And in this process of sharing information and becoming more of a unified group of individuals, recognizing that we're in alignment with the ability to really integrate this and get those downloads and have those epiphanies, this is all purging. It's a mass exorcism. And I'm sure I remember saying this in an interview with you before, that it's like a mass exorcism is underway. And even these trolls that come on these threads, it's like, I call it a pea soup moment. Oh, they're just having a pea soup. They're just emoting their demonic ways. I don't know. They're very threatened. And the thing is, it's like, you know, the reassurance is there's unconditional love from source. For us humans, it might take a while to forgive, but we have a direct connection with that unconditional love. And anybody can turn it around. And it's time to stop. It's like, because the thing is, these negative technologies are going to expire. Transhumanism is getting busted. People, you know, aren't buying into those timelines, which is weakening them, and if they can get so weak to a point where they become space dust and they don't exist at all. So
what do you think?
She's brilliant. You've played clips of her before. I could listen to her all day because she is so knowledgeable and correct in what she's saying. Really.
Yeah.
You know, it's really good stuff there. I wish that she would talk a little more slowly so that we could have time to take it in, because it's coming so quickly that it's hard to grasp it all. Does she have books written books? Do you know?
Absolutely. If you go to YouTube, she's all over YouTube, just like Andrew Bisago, Laura Eisenhower, Michael Sella, all of these people are all over. Listen, here, I'm going to make a prediction. There's so much coming down, and there's going to be so many podcasts and books and information coming forward from now on for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, talking about all of this and the vastness of the universe. So what you are saying is key for many people who have not thought in terms of the structure, design, and the format, and the formula that you have been expressing for the past week, 4 or 5 weeks, that it's going to be gold. It's going to be more powerful than platinum, gold, or silver. It's going to be worth billions and billions of dollars in terms of people getting another sense of self. Like George says it this way, quickly.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself.
All right.
You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater, and what you sow, you shall reap.
So go ahead and expound on that for us. Come on.
Well, I've always said the same thing. Salvation's a do-it-yourself program, right? And so although all these things about extraterrestrials and the things that we've been talking about, these are important matters. They are things that we should give some time and attention to, and we should make sure we're on the right side, because right now there is this huge energy coming from the central core of our universe, which regenerates the universe, the actual physical universe, with light. It becomes regenerative, and it's rolling over Earth. As I said, we're at the tail end of everything, but we're getting it. And with that, we can get enlightenment. We can get to understand. Enlightenment is understanding. And what we need to understand, as well as the fact that we have to choose, make sure we're on the right side when things come down, and they are coming down. We need to know which side we're standing on. So we need to be standing on the side of goodness and light for sure. Right, we don't want to get caught up with the dark side. And that does have a physical reality for us. It means that in our physically real lives, we have to make sure that we stand up for the things that are right, and as far as possible, get rid of the things that are not right in our lives. But equally important, we have to be paying our attention to our immortal selves, to our souls, and making sure that our soul is filled with light and life and goodness, and not filled with darkness, that we in our lives are shedding light around us, are sharing light with like-minded beings. I guess that was one of the things that George used to talk about, and I totally, totally support it, that at this time in history, we need at a personal level to spend our time with like-minded people, that we need to be associating with people who are right thinking. And right thinking is not a particular political party or religious view. That's got nothing to do with it. It's right thinking is people who are willing to do that which they know in their heart of hearts is right, and always act on that rather than just do what's expedient for the moment, which is basically what politicians do. You don't want to be like the politicians doing what's expedient to put money in your back pocket. You want to do what is right and to surround yourself with those same kind of right-thinking people. If there are people in your environment, there was a time. Let me tell you this little story. There was a time when I was young, very young, in my late teens, and I was still a big church goer at the time. I lived in England, and I loved going to church on Sundays, you know, three times on a Sunday to church. I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was my pleasure. And I was going through one of those holy moly phases, if you like, a phase in life, and I decided that it would be virtuous if I made an extra effort to be nice to people I didn't like. And so I would go when I went into town. If I saw somebody on the other side of the street coming down the road that was not a person I liked, right, I would cross the road to make sure that I came face to face with them, and then I'd stop and ask them how they were and was everything going well, and then I would carry on, right? And I thought I was being virtuous. And I had a dear friend who was another clairvoyant, And when I told her that I was doing this as a practice to become more virtuous, she looked at me absolutely amazed, and she said, "Are you insane?" She said, "Why would you cross the street to talk to people you don't like? That's insanity, right? That's not virtue, that's insanity." And I came to understand that what it really was hypocrisy. It was a form of hypocrisy. And many, many years later, Spirit told me, they said, there is, because they're not big on the idea of sin. They're not into sin, right? But they said, there is one thing that we consider a major sin, and that is hypocrisy. Better to be an honest sinner than a hypocritical saint, by your measure, right? Because we can never know all the story for everybody, but we can know our own story. And so we have to be honest with ourselves. That's the single most important thing all of us can be doing at this time in history. Be honest with yourself. Don't delude yourself anymore. We all create illusions that we live by. Our whole life is an illusion. We are playing a game of being whoever we have decided we will be. We have developed that personality. It's how we present ourselves to the world, and it's how the world sees us. But is it the truth of ourselves? Is it real? Only we can know that. And so now is a time in history when it's really, really important, because of all these dark forces that are arrayed against us who are normal human beings. We're just all ordinary, normal human beings. And these dark forces of powerful people are arrayed against us. How do we protect ourselves against them? Well, we protect ourselves against them by being honest with ourselves, because there is nothing more powerful than truth. So be true to yourself. Know yourself. Be honest with yourself. You know, if you pick up the phone and have a telephone voice, you know, when, "Oh, hello, this is so-and-so speaking." If fine, that's fine. Millions of people do it. We all have a telephone voice. Admit it to yourself. Recognize the truth of yourself and acknowledge it, because that will protect you all the way down the line against these forces arrayed against us, because they are, number one, all liars. Everything about them is a lie. Think about that.
Okay.
People who have that control, they are liars, and liars do not win.
All right.
That's why they're evil, because they're liars.
Okay. All right. All right. George says about you.
And Good Morning America. No, great. But it's just showing that there is consciousness. And
we
know that. I mean, it's
animals.
Chris Birds with when he did his stuff on the talking to the plants. You know, that E.T. group down in Brazil that were plants, look like humans, but chlorophyll-based.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got that salve. I still have that information for curing cancer. And so, you know, the game becomes very, you know, just exploring. I love the exploration of what the universe is all about. I'd be glad to, you know, take off and go to other planets and explore and do things. But that's not my job at this point, is to try to awaken and save the remnant. Does it look good? No. But I'm going to keep trying and say I'm not failing, because I'm doing my job.
You definitely are doing your job, George Green.
Well, is it going fast enough? Maybe.
Let me ask you one thing about the time in Atlantis. Sorry, have you been told anything about, you know, that we've been through this again,
yes,
in the past as an Earth and as a people?
Sure. My wife, who's a clairvoyant, remembers the total time of Atlantis and Lemuria.
And when they went from Atlantis and the destruction of Atlantis,
all of that.
And they
she
went
can
to
tell
Egypt.
You all, yeah, she can tell you the whole thing and who was in charge and how it all happened, and we're going to go through the same thing.
Okay.
But there's something to look at. It's okay to look back. Don't stare.
Okay, that's interesting, yeah.
No, seriously. Because
right.
You can get caught up in what is there. And remember what I told you in the beginning. The only thing that exists is right now.
Okay, so we are going to go through that again. You went through Lemuria and Atlantis. This whole planet is going to do it again?
Well, we are doing it. We are in a state of general chaos and upheaval. So it's a different kind of destruction, that's all. It's a different. History has repeated itself many, many times. We are not the first civilization on Earth. Atlantis was not the first civilization on Earth. There were civilizations long before Atlantis. Compared to the universe, Earth is quite a young planet. Our solar system is a fairly young system, and Earth is fairly young. But compared to the way we measure time, then Earth is very old, and it's had many, many experiences since the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Many, many civilizations have risen. The difference is, and this is the one saving grace, as far as I'm concerned, of the Anunnaki, because they have a lot to account for, right? And you know, I talk about them, and I belong them. You know, I'm one of them, and I know very well they are not sweetness and light by any manner of means. A good percentage of them, they're trying to be better. Let's put it that way. They're trying to get back to where they were. But I have said this over and over again, and I don't think anybody believes me, which is fine. Everybody believes what they want to believe. But the gift of the Anunnaki to us humans was two of their genes that they put into our genetic makeup when they were taking the hominid species and advancing it to Homo sapiens. And what that did was give us the potential for immortality. It's a huge gift because the Anunnaki are those known in the Bible as the Watchers, or the fallen angels, or whatever you want to call them, right? But they are beings of light originally. Their original source was out of the light. They did not evolve like the rest of the human species. They didn't evolve like other species on other planets, who all have evolved out of their planet, out of their system, as humans evolved out of Earth. We are Earth humans. Right? The Anunnaki were not like that. In the beginning, they were an angelic species. They have degenerated over the hundreds of millions of years that they've been around, because they've been around since the beginning, pretty much. So yes, they've generated, and they've been done some terrible things, and blah, 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 blah. But they did give us humans the potential for immortality, and that is a tremendous gift that no other species in the universe has. I mean, think about that. There isn't another species in the universe like Earth humans.
I would say not. But some say that when we look at human beings here, that mentally, they are unreliable, sometimes violent, sometimes hateful and jealous and deceitful. They can, in one instance, be loving and quickly change to become your worst enemy, husbands against wives, girlfriends against boyfriends. They have a love-hate relationship going on all the time. And so how do you resolve that? What is that about, if I may?
Well, it's because we're still like children. We still have to grow up.
As a species,
we are very young. There've only been Homo sapiens on this planet for 40,000 years, and they've only been in charge of themselves with a level of civilized knowledge, right, of how to create a civilization and live on the planet for the last less than 10,000 years.
I see.
So, you know, I mean, look at what they've achieved in that very, very short time. In terms of the cosmos, right?
Uh-huh.
And in terms of other civilizations that have risen on other planetary systems, some of whom have learned how to extend their lives 1,000 years, like the Pleiadians claim 1,000-year lifespan, right? Well, Earth humans started out with that, of course, and we went backwards, not forwards, with that. Our lifespan became shorter, but now it's beginning to build up again. But the one thing that they have not learned to do, because they don't have the ability or the potential to do it, is become immortal. None of the other species are immortal species. Not the ones in the physical realm. They all die eventually along with their planets, and have done. Planets,
wow.
Great civilizations on other planets have risen up over centuries and survived and lived, you know, 1,000, 2,000 year lifespans, and developed super high civilization, and then their sun goes red dwarf and their planet dies, and they die with it. And their energy, the divine spark, their soul energy, the energy of their soul, goes back to the creative beginning, goes back to the source.
How do you know that?
But Earth humans have, because that's the way it works, but Earth humans have something different that they got from the Anunnaki. Now, it is possible, I don't know of anywhere else, certainly in my own historical connection with the Anunnaki, where they have interacted with another species the way they did with Earth humans. But they both genetically altered and developed modern Earth humans. And then as the humans advanced and expanded, they actually mated with Earth humans. They married them. Marduk had a whole family. And that was indeed why he first was interested in doing more genetic engineering, because he wanted to extend the life of his wife. He had a wife, an Earth wife, and children who he loved so much that that was why he didn't go home when they had the chance. He stayed on this planet. He's got a pretty bad rap because he did a lot of bad things. But where it came to his family, he was a very devoted husband and father, and he adored his family and he adored his wife, and gave up the chance to go back home and be restored to his previous position in the heavens, right? Because he wanted to stay on Earth with his wife. So there's a whole lot gone on with the Anunnaki, right. And many of them, almost half of them, are very connected to Earth and Earth humans and their descendants. Let us understand they have actual descendant families on this planet.
Okay.
That they still keep track of.
Okay. But they didn't give them the ability to do telepathy, or remote viewing.
Well, you don't give somebody that. It's a frequency. And that person has to develop that skill. We all have the potential to develop it.
Well,
but it takes work.
But they
don't
abduct...
just give it to somebody.
Okay, all right. But when they abduct people through the spaceships and to do whatever, examine them, whatever, have some hybrids or whatever, they block the memory and the people can't remember after they get back here. I mean, we can go to Dr. Mack, we can go to Communion, we can just go the fourth kind. If you ever see the motion picture, the fourth kind, we can go to the motion picture of Communion and on and on and on. Or another picture that I saw that was,
yeah,
where it spoke to the issue was called Forgotten. You know, by,
yeah. Okay. Well,
have you seen
let
Forgotten?
Me tell you how that comes about. Let me tell you how that comes about.
Okay.
They're not remembering, right?
Okay. Okay.
But in order to take you for physical work, for physical examination, testing, instruction, adjustment, whatever they are taking a particular person for, in order to take you physically on board one of their ships, you go through a molecular process, right, where everything is speeded up. I mean, phenomenal high-speed spin, right? Unbelievably high-speed spin, right? And so you go, they do whatever they do, And then they have to, I'm putting you back. There is this high-speed spin process. Very often they don't take your physical body. They take you out of body when it's a learning thing, when they're just going to instruct you and they put your physical self back. But either way, there is a process that you have to go through, and it causes a spinning at subatomic level at such high speed that if you were awake when it happened, you would probably die, right? You know, you'd at least get very sick and ill, and it would be a very, very unpleasant experience. But it's that process which is necessary to move you back and forth without damaging your physical body that causes you to not remember. So I've had that experience, and I've complained about it more than once, right? And one time I actually persuaded him. I said, okay, I said, this time, I said, I understand what you're telling me, but I want you to slow the spin enough so that I come to full consciousness quicker, painful memory. And they said, if you insist, we'll do it for you, but you won't like it. Well, I can promise you I would never, ever do it again. Never. I would rather spend my time thinking about it and racking my brains, because you do actually recall the experience. What you don't do is recall it in the moment. If you are taken on board a ship which is actually in orbit around this planet, for a normal person's brain to get to the point where it can bring into memory or out of memory storage, if you like, so you are conscious of what happened to you, takes 8 to 12 hours. So if you were taken one night at, say, 3 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be somewhere around noon the next day when you need to sit down and think, okay, what was I doing? Because sometime between noon and 6 that evening, that's when the memory will be available in your consciousness. And that's when you need to sit and think about it. It's no use waking up and saying, oh, I think I was taken last night, but I can't remember. You can't, because it's a process.
Okay. All right.
It's not magic. It's not magic. It's just a function of the physical form.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Well, listen, we've covered a lot of territory, and I really appreciate you, because there are a lot of people who don't know who William Tompkins is. They don't know who Dr. Seller happens to be. And I'm suggesting that they haven't watched Taken, which is a 13-hour miniseries. And you say 90% of that information there is true. And I would recommend. Huh?
Yeah, it's a good story. And it's very, very close to reality. Yes, it is.
Yeah. A lot of information in that. Hearts in Atlantis, The Fourth Kind, Communion, Interrupted Journey, Barney Hill, Betty Hill. Did you know about that story, 1960?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was an interesting story.
Of all the, you know, I'm looking at all the stories of Anderson and all that, you know, that English, I can't think of the name of that one, that UFO story in England. But why... Even they made a motion picture of Barney and Betty Hill of 1961. Why all the press and why all the believability about that story? And they didn't believe Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky, or Communion, you know, Whitney Strieber. They didn't believe in many instances. But a lot of people resonated with that story. Why?
I have no idea. That's the vagaries of people. We're all different. We all have things we can accept and things we can't. Travis, I'm sure, they just thought they were a bunch of kids having fun, and that's why they didn't believe him. And it was that. I did actually know him briefly.
Oh, you did?
Met him when he came one time to Global. And, yeah, it's some things are easier to believe. Maybe they believed them, the Hill story, because there were two of them. You know, there were two people experiencing it. And, you know, sometimes spirit itself or the extraterrestrials or whoever it is, I just use spirit as a generic term for, you know, anybody or anybody that's not down here in the physical, I call them all spirit. It's easy. But they sometimes do things with people as couples because they want the experience to be believed, at least by the people it happens to. I know for many years I had a clairvoyant friend, Sayada, who lived in Alaska, and she and I would get information or invitations from the guys and telling us to go somewhere, and they would meet us and walk us through a whole series of experiences. And they did that many times, and we asked them one time, why is it that you call us together to do this? We're both clairvoyants, but we live a long way apart. Why don't you do this for each of us? Why do you bring us together to do it? And one of the things they said one time was, well, you'd be too afraid to do it by yourselves. We know you girls. You know, you would go and shriek in the corner and say, oh, I can't do that. But the other thing was that they said, we wanted you to have verification of the events. We wanted you to know, yes, this is real. This is a real experience, and I'm not imagining it, because two people are having the same experience simultaneously. So sometimes spirit does that. And it does make things more believable.
All right. Well, listen, I thank you for being here today, and you've covered a lot of territory, I think, and which is good for a lot of people. George Green, why did he decide that he would put aside all of his talents in terms of making all the money that he was making and to go travel all over the world for 40 years in search of the UFO question? Why? You talked about that.
Why did he do it? Well, he did it because prior to, you know, he was a regular guy. He was into his rocks. He was when he was young, I'm sure he was a nerd. George was a nerd. He was into books, and he was into his rocks and dinosaurs and old stuff. Very much a loner in many ways, but he loved people. He was a very loving person, was George. Good heart. And when he was very successful in business, he was invited to become the finance chairman for the election committee for the next president, and this was 2 years before a presidential election, and the person who was asking him was Ted Kennedy, and George said, well, you know, it's 2 years to the election, and so they said, yes, but the next president will be Jimmy Carter. And so anyway, that led into George attending many meetings with these people at that level. George Soros was always around. Trudeau, who was then Premier of Canada, was involved. Ted Kennedy was involved. The whole Kennedy family were involved. It was this level of people, top people from the head of the NSA, CIA, these kinds of people. And he sat in on meetings with them for a week or two, when they were explaining what they wanted him to do. And he said that they would be sitting in a room discussing how they were going to reduce the world's population, because the world was becoming too populated and they needed population reduction. And they made all their plans. And then he said on one occasion they'd been discussing all kinds of things about depopulation by all means necessary. That's what they said. We have to get rid of people. And then he said on that occasion, there were about seven or eight people on the discussion, and half of them went into another room to form a committee to do something else. And as soon as those people left, the people left behind said, and when we get this going, then those people who've just left, how do we get rid of them? And he said it was such an eye-opener. He said up to that point, he'd been extremely naive. You know, he actually believed the government and believed the government was looking after him and believed all the things that most people believe about their government, that it's essentially a good thing that's caring for the people and the nation. He said that time spent with those people was such an eye-opener. and such a shock. He said, and they were all snorting cocaine, they were all druggies, and Ted Kennedy said he wanted to sleep with George's youngest daughter, who was only 14 then, and Ted Kennedy said he didn't care, he wanted to sleep with her anyway. These were disgusting people. And George was absolutely horrified. And subsequent to that, he decided he would start a publishing company and publish the books that the whistleblowers were coming out with, telling the truth about these different things in government. Different whistleblowers were coming out at that time about the oil industry and the drugs and so on. So he quit making money in his construction business and started a publishing company instead, primarily to print the books that nobody else would print, because there were these whistleblower stories and they were too dangerous for, you know, getting sued or getting somebody after you for libel or whatever. And nobody would print these books. And it was in that vein that he began to interact with people like Robert Flower of New York with the Gilchrist Institute, and Stephen Wendell, and just became involved with the UFO people, who were also telling stories, opening things up. He had a friend who worked for NASA who was giving him information. George had friends all over the place, and in a lot of the three-letter agencies, people he'd known through business for a long time, and they gave him all kinds of bits of information that he was able to put to good use, to use himself trying to waken people up. And through that process, he was contacted by, when he was over at Billy Myers, looking at Billy Myers stuff, he was contacted by the two people who said they were Pleiadians, named Quetzal and Semyasi. And they asked him to print the handbooks for them, which he did. And then he basically went on the lecture circuit, traveling around trying to get people to realize the government is lying to you. The world is not what it seems to be. So he used to call it the big monopoly game, right? It's just a giant monopoly game, and a few people own the top hat and the ship, and they're the ones that are buying everything up, and it's a game you, as an ordinary person, can never, ever win. And that's true. Ordinary people can never win this game. The only way to win is to not play. And to not play the game is impossible at this time in history. We all have to play the game to some extent. Just restrict the hours that you play it. That's all I can really say about it. But no, George, above all else, truly, genuinely cared about people and wanted to help them. He really did. Right. You know, it cost him everything. Yes, I'm sure he will. But when he was doing this, it cost George everything.
Yeah, millions,
it cost
and
him his wife. She and, left him. Desiree left him. It cost him all his money. All his wealth was eaten up. Producing the books for the extraterrestrials and giving them away for years, which he did. And financing himself to travel all over the country, talking to anybody and everybody who wanted to listen about why it was the way it was and what they could do to prepare for what was coming, which is basically become self-reliant, turn your money into a bit of gold and silver and keep your head down and hope for the best. Because that's all any of us can do right now.
Yeah, yeah. So you may say that he was self-absorbed in terms of helping humanity. Is that a good way to say it?
Oh, it was an obsession with him.
It was an obsession.
Five days before he died. Well, no, before he went into, he spent the last 5 days of his life in the hospice. He had to, because he needed 24-hour care, which physically I was not able to give him at that point. But 5 days before that, so 10 days before he died, he was doing a radio show. Huh. And one of his regular radio shows, telling people, you know, I don't know if it was, I think it was Regina Meredith, it might have been even Kerry, that he was on the phone with talking about what they needed to do. That was mostly about economics. He was talking about, you know, what was coming down with the reset and protect your money, protect your wealth.
Yeah, the last time I interviewed him, I think, was 1992, when I was working with the American Radio Network, so covering about 30 stations across the country. He had Wendell Phillips with him.
Wendell Stevens.
Yeah. Listen, it's been wonderful to talk with you. Certainly, there are people who want to hear your voice, and they really enjoy what you say and how you say it. And they, people close to me. So I said, let me do another show. So thank you for your time.
Well, that's very nice of them. I appreciate it. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not a great crusader like George was, but if I can say anything that helps anybody, that would be wonderful. I'd be so grateful to think that I could say something that actually was useful to somebody. I wish to be useful, that's all. So thank you for having me.
And you have indeed.
I appreciate it.
I really thank you for taking your time out of the day to do this. So thank you.
Very welcome.
We'll talk next time.
Thank you.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, bye now.
Bye now.
Okay,
bye.
Take care.